Next on Radio Zine, I'm KBOO host Karen James, and I'll speak with Alex Coven, staff attorney with the Oregon Justice Resource Center's Women's Justice Project. Anyone who's been in trouble with the law knows about court-ordered fines and fees. And if you're struggling to pay these fines and fees, Alex Coven just released a new guide about court-ordered financial obligations in Oregon criminal courts. This new guide explains how to avoid these fines and fees, how to get them reduced, and helps figure out ways to pay the fines and fees that you owe. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you very much, Karen. Yes, so we have published a guide to court-ordered financial obligations in Oregon courts. We sometimes use the phrase COFOs for short for court-ordered financial obligations. We also sometimes just refer to it shorthand as fines and fees. And broadly speaking, these are any financial penalty that a Oregon criminal court can impose on a person as a result of a case. We've published this guide, which includes information on all of the different kinds of fines and fees, as well as restitution and compensatory fines. So a guide to understanding how those work and how those might be imposed. And then additionally, information showing how these financial obligations can grow and sometimes grow at very exorbitant rates without people having the knowledge or knowing that they're growing. And then most importantly for us is we wanted to put together information to help individuals who are burdened by fines and fees have some tools at their disposal for how they can help address these, how they can, in some cases, prevent them before they get imposed in the first place, or for those people who are struggling after the fact with fines and fees, how they can ask the courts to waive or reduce those obligations.
And Alex, Oregon Justice Resource Center works with people who have been involved with the criminal legal system, and you've seen them struggle with trying to pay these fines and fees.
Yes, and that's really been the inspiration for this report. So at the Women's Justice Project, we work with individual clients of ours who are incarcerated at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, which is Oregon's women's prison, on a variety of different legal issues that touch on their reentry back into the community. The goal of the program was to help people with legal issues that would make that transition back into the community easier for folks. And we kept seeing a lot of people requesting us for assistance with addressing fines and fees and these financial obligations because of the various ways that having a balance with the court can burden somebody. These fines and fees get in the way of somebody's ability to get a driver's license. They can get in the way of your ability to get off of supervision. They can impact employment, housing, many different areas. And so we were seeing these requests come in, and what we were seeing from individuals who came to us were that these weren't people that didn't want to pay the fines and fees or thought they were, you know, that they just wanted to skirt that obligation. They just found them to be overwhelming and didn't have the ability to pay them on their own and needed some way to go back to the courts and ask for help. What we were seeing is that most of the people that came to us really didn't feel that they had the ability to do it on their own because of how complex these can be. And in many cases, because these fines can grow over time and over many years, some of them being very old, that people didn't even know what their fines and fees were. And so this kind of inspired us to put together a guide to help those folks who can't get connected to an attorney navigate this process on their own.
So let's talk about fines, fees, restitution. So explain each one. Give an example.
So court-ordered financial obligations, COFOs, broadly speaking in Oregon, fall under these four main categories: fines, fees, restitution, and compensatory fines. Fines, broadly speaking, are any financial penalty that a judge imposes that is a punishment for a crime. So a fine is you've been found guilty or pled guilty, convicted of a crime, and the financial penalty is a part of the punishment. Now, a fee is, and there are many different kinds of fees, but broadly speaking, a fee is some sort of financial obligation that you are ordered to pay to basically pay back the legal system for the cost of prosecuting your case. So a person might be ordered to pay attorney's fees If you were appointed an attorney, you might have to pay some amount of money to compensate for that attorney. You might have to pay various fees for the cost of the prosecution. There's fees involved in a wide variety of areas, but it's not technically a punishment. It is compensating the court system for some financial reason. The final two kinds, restitution and compensatory fines, both have to do with the crime victim. Restitution is when somebody's been convicted of a crime and the court orders the defendant to pay some amount of money to compensate the victim, to make them whole for whatever financial loss the victim had. So a typical kind of example of restitution would be if you committed a theft against a person, you stole some amount of money from them. You're found guilty of that, and the court orders you to pay that money back to that individual to make the person whole. And then finally, compensatory fine is similar to restitution. It's a slightly more nuanced area of the law, but basically that is when you've been ordered to pay a fine, so you've been punished financially for the crime, and the court orders that a portion or all of that fine is going to be given to the victim for some reason. So those, broadly speaking, are like the main types of financial obligations, but those are just the financial obligations that the court imposes. That is before a number of different things that can happen to make those financial obligations grow over time.
At what point does the court order these fines and fees? Is it when you first go to court or at sentencing? When does that happen for a person?
Depending on the different kind of financial obligation, it can be ordered at really any part of a criminal case. There are some kinds of financial obligations that can be ordered as soon as the first or second day after somebody's been charged with an offense. For example, if a person gets charged with an offense and cannot afford an attorney and has to file an application with the court to ask to have an attorney appointed for them, that application comes with an application fee. So as early as your first day, you could be ordered to pay fees all the way up until your potential conviction, sentencing. Usually, at the time of sentencing, is when the majority of these financial obligations are imposed by the court. And then there are several different fees and things that can actually attach to somebody after the case is over, after a person thinks they're long done with the criminal matter.
As a person is going through the criminal process, does their attorney or public defender explain these fees to them? Do they help them understand what these financial obligations, what they are?
So, what we have heard from clients of ours who have gone through this is sometimes yes and sometimes no. There are some attorneys who are very detail-oriented and go through all of these potential financial penalties with a person at every stage, but a lot of the time it doesn't get discussed. And in fact, most, if not all, of the people who came to us seeking help with their financial penalties have told us that this is just something that wasn't clearly explained to me. And a part of the reason for that is that when you find yourself in the criminal legal system, it can be a very overwhelming process. But for most people, the immediate fears, the immediate places that their thoughts go to is, am I going to spend time in jail or in prison? Am I going to be placed on some kind of supervision or probation? How is this going to impact my life in a variety of different ways? But that focus tends to be the primary focus of not only the defendants involved with the criminal legal system, but the attorneys and the prosecutors and the defense attorneys who are working on the case and negotiating plea agreements or potentially going to trial. And so that focus often means that the parties involved, the attorneys and the judges, don't look at the financial considerations as closely. And as a result, many people go through a whole case in sentencing, and there is never any discussion in front of a judge about that person's financial circumstances, about their ability to pay, or any reasons that they wouldn't be able to pay, or why the financial obligations would create a massive burden on them. And so as a result, we do see that in many, many cases, these things are just not adequately explained to folks.
You talked about the ability to pay. So, does the court or anyone consider whether a defendant has the ability to pay?
So at the very beginning of the process, if somebody can't afford to pay for an attorney on their own and they're asking an attorney to be appointed, there is an application form that they fill out that has their financial circumstances to determine if they qualify for an appointed attorney. But that form rarely, if ever, gets in front of a judge, and it is a very early stage in the proceedings. Somebody's ability to pay, what we found in preparing this guide is that there are many good laws on the books that actually, in many cases, give judges the discretion, or in other cases, actually require a judge to look at somebody's ability to pay. But we are just not seeing that happening in practice in a courtroom. Many of these cases of individuals who came to us saying, I need help with my fines and fees, we ended up going back and looking at their cases and finding that even though the court was supposed to consider their financial circumstances and their ability to pay, it just never was discussed. And so, in a lot of areas, there is an ability to pay finding that can and should be made. Now, there are certain other areas of the law where that is not the case. And certainly, we would want to see, if changes are going to be made in future, that that be a primary consideration.
So, for instance, in your guide for the court-appointed attorney fee, you give an example about a $100,000 plus attorney fee. Talk about that.
Yes. So that is one extreme example, but not uncommon, and certainly sheds light on what we see in a lot of these cases. In this one case example, we saw an individual who was charged with a crime in Oregon Circuit Court, filled out an application, and was found at the beginning of the case to qualify to have an appointed attorney, meaning that the court made a legal determination that he didn't have the financial ability to pay for an attorney on his own. And then, despite that, at the end of the case, that when the judge was ordering court fines and court fees, the judge, as a part of the sentence, ordered this individual to pay $103,827 of attorney's fees, despite him having an appointed attorney throughout the entire case. And it is not uncommon for courts to impose these extreme financial penalties without considering a person's ability to pay, or really considering what that financial obligation does to a person over a period of years. This is somebody who was actually at sentencing, was facing a lengthy prison sentence. So it's not only that this person would have no ability to pay over the time that they were incarcerated, but then is releasing and would like to release to circumstances that the person could start getting back on their feet and re-entering society and becoming a productive member of our community. But having this hanging over their head would make that a virtual impossibility.
Talk more about the burden on people and the barriers that these fines and fees present.
Yes. So court fines and fees really, and there's at this point sort of well documented, not just in Oregon, but in jurisdictions around the country, it's well documented that court fines and fees keep people in a cycle of poverty. To begin with, these fines and fees are disproportionately applied to marginalized communities, to people of color, low-income Oregonians, oftentimes people in rural communities. So at the starting point, the fines and fees are already being disproportionately applied to marginalized communities. And then from there, the inability to pay those fines results in the financial obligations growing, and it also results in a number of collateral consequences that befall folks. In many cases, if you have outstanding fines and fees from the court, that means that the court will place a hold on your driver's license, and that individual cannot seek to have a driver's license reinstated until they address the fines and fees with the court. That's particularly harmful for people who live outside of the Portland metro area, who live in, areas of Oregon that do not have reliable public transportation and yet need to drive to keep their employment, need to drive to attend perhaps supervision meetings or other requirements that they have for the court to stay in good standing with the criminal legal system. Additionally, fines and fees can result in somebody staying on supervision longer than they would have. So, if you were ordered by a court to be placed on probation or parole or post-prison supervision for a particular period of time, oftentimes, if you haven't settled your financial obligations, that period of time can be extended. Another very kind of important collateral consequence for folks is people trying to get their criminal record expunged. If you have a criminal conviction and you'd like to seek an old criminal conviction that you'd like to get erased, expunged from your record, You're not able to do that if you haven't satisfied the financial obligations on that case. And then that having a criminal record that you're unable to expunge from your criminal history can have all kinds of downstream effects for folks who are trying to get employment, but perhaps can't because of their criminal history, are trying to seek public housing, but perhaps can't because of their criminal history. The financial penalties and keeping people in the cycle of poverty really does not promote community well-being. What we found, and what many other reports have found, is that there is not really any evidence-based benefits to most of these criminal fines and fees. And instead, what it does is it just keeps people in desperate situations that makes them more likely to get involved in the criminal legal system again.
I understand that people who get in trouble with the law can be charged with these fines and fees, whether they're found guilty or not. And can you talk about when the court expects people to begin paying these charges?
So in some cases, the courts can order fees before you have been found guilty, and in some cases, regardless of whether you've been found guilty, particularly at the front end of a case when, for example, somebody's applying for appointed counsel. Those are fees that are imposed before somebody has been found guilty of any kind of crime. In many cases, and I think it's important just for individuals who are in the criminal legal system to kind of know that in many cases, any financial obligation that's imposed by a court is typically due either immediately or within 30 days of the financial obligation being imposed. And so, particularly at the very end of a case, when somebody has been sentenced, that is the most important time for somebody to either speak to the court about why you can't afford to pay immediately, or speak to the court about if you feel that you can pay on some kind of a payment plan. Because the real concern that we have for individuals in the system is that a financial obligation at the end of a case can grow quite considerably if somebody hasn't made their payments in a timely way. And it can, importantly, it can grow without the person's knowledge.
Alex, please give the name of the guide and let listeners know where they can get this information, which is free from the Oregon Justice Resource Center.
Yes. So the guide is called A Guide to Court-Ordered Financial Obligations. It is available on Oregon Justice Resource Center's website at ojrc.info. If you click on the button for reports, it is available in our reports section. It is a free report. We very much hope that people use it to their benefit and share it with anybody else who they think might benefit from it.
Alex, let's talk about criminal fines, which are the most common type of fines.
Yes. So criminal fines are a financial penalty that can be imposed if somebody's found guilty of either a felony or a misdemeanor crime. In Oregon, felonies and misdemeanors are prosecuted in the Oregon Circuit Courts. So every county has its own circuit court. And these are crimes that somebody, in the case of a misdemeanor, could face a penalty of up to a year in jail, or in the case of a felony, can face a penalty of a prison sentence. And the current state of the Oregon law on criminal fines is that for each degree of offense, the law specifies a maximum fine that a judge can impose. And the law also allows the court to consider at the time of sentencing a person's financial resources or their financial circumstances in determining whether the fine would be too burdensome to pay or whether the person can pay on some kind of installment plan. And so in many cases, we do see judges who are doing this properly and are, considering whether the financial penalty is too burdensome for somebody to pay. But in many other cases, we see that those considerations are not taken into account or are ignored, and people can be ordered to pay large amount of criminal fines. Another important consideration about criminal fines is that they attach to the charge rather than the case. So a person might have one criminal case with multiple charges in it. One example that we have as a case example in the guide is a person who was charged in one criminal case with basically a crime of theft, of stealing somebody's credit cards and then using those credit cards. And although it was kind of one case, what ended up happening is there were multiple charges within that case because the stealing of the credit cards was a crime. Every time the credit card was used was an individual crime. And rather than receiving one criminal fine for the case, what instead happened is the judge imposes a fine for every single underlying charge. So, kind of to take that example to a little bit more extreme hypothetical, if you were convicted of using somebody's credit card 100 times, you could conceivably be charged with 100 counts and given a criminal fine for each of those. And it is not uncommon that we see that in many cases. Another thing that we see commonly with criminal fines and other financial penalties associated with a criminal case is that it becomes a big part of plea bargaining. When you're charged with a crime in Oregon, typically what will happen is your attorney will have plea discussions with the prosecuting attorney to see if the parties can agree to something other than going to trial, some sort of agreement where the defendant would agree to plead guilty to a crime in exchange for some recommendation, some specific recommendation from the prosecutor. And although most often those plea discussions are around jail time, prison time, what charges you would plead guilty to, the financial penalties do sometimes enter those plea discussions. And what we have seen in some cases, and we actually use some of these case examples in our guide, is that oftentimes prosecutors will use the threat of financial penalties to their advantage. You might be given a plea offer that says something to the effect of, I will agree to not recommend any fines or financial penalties if you, the defendant, agree to potentially a more harsh penalty of jail or prison than you maybe would have otherwise. Or actually, we most commonly see in the plea discussions restitution as a big part of the plea discussions, because restitution is something that typically involves a whole additional court hearing where the court needs to make factual determinations as to how much financial damage occurred. And the prosecutor can potentially avoid having to do that hearing by saying, I will agree to recommend a more lenient jail or prison sentence in exchange for you agreeing to some amount of money that you're going to pay as restitution and not challenging that in any way, even if you might have legitimate challenges to it. And for a person who's in the criminal legal system and is facing that fear of incarceration, and that being typically the primary thing that somebody's thinking about, it can be very easy to say, I will agree to whatever it is you want me to pay, as long as it means I can reduce my sentence. People in that kind of situation are unfortunately in a situation where they have no choice but to agree. So the recommendations for the financial punishments that are being made by the prosecutor.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Radio Zine, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. Oregon Justice Resource Center is an organization that seeks to frustrate and dismantle mass incarceration in Oregon. It has a number of core programs, and my guest, Alex Coven, is staff attorney with their Women's Justice Project. He just released a guide to court-ordered financial obligations in Oregon criminal courts. So, Alex, talk about what happens to people when they don't pay these fines and fees, and who actually enforces, who collects payment?
So, after a criminal case is over and the defendant has been ordered to pay some total financial obligation, typically in most cases, the person's given 30 days to make that payment. In the event that they don't make the payment or they haven't agreed to some other payment plan with the court, the first thing that often happens is that they immediately get given a whole new fee. There's something called a payment schedule assessment in Oregon circuit courts. So these are the courts that deal with felony and misdemeanor crimes. It's like a processing fee. It's the fee of the court having to deal with your outstanding balance. And then after that fee is imposed, the next thing that most commonly impacts people are collections referral fees. So, if a person owes money to a court and they haven't made payments, the court can send the balance to a collections agency. And in the circuit courts, the county circuit courts, there are typically two collections agencies that somebody's balance might get sent to. The first is the Oregon Department of Revenue, which effectively acts as the collections agency for the state of Oregon. And then there's actually a second collections agency, which is a private collections agency. It's basically a law firm. And if your case gets sent to a collections agency, a couple of things are going to happen. The first is the court is going to impose a new additional fee called the collections referral fee. The law that we've researched in this area is not very well defined, but from what we've found, can be anywhere up to 28% of the balance of what you owe. And this is ostensibly the amount, the cost of sending your balance to a collections agency. And then the second thing that will happen is you might start to get letters from the collections agency threatening all kinds of potential legal action if the fee is not imposed. And people will get these letters and be absolutely terrified about the potential consequences of not making payments on the outstanding balance of their financial obligations. Now, what we've also seen is that if a collections agency has your balance for, say, a period of a year and nothing has happened on it, they will often return the balance to the court and say, we have been unable to collect on it. And then the court might send it to a second collections agency. And so we've seen examples where you don't have the ability to pay for whatever reason, that those circumstances continue. Your balance has now been sent to multiple collections agencies, and each time they have imposed a new 28% fee that gets added to the balance. So what was a, maybe a couple thousand dollar fine and fee has blown up to 5,000, 10,000, sometimes more than that as a balance. And then the third possible way in which somebody's balance can grow is that the court actually has the right under the law to charge interest on a judgment. I will caveat this by saying that at the present time, it's our understanding that it's the position of Oregon Judicial Department that they are taking the position that they will not be charging interest on any judgments. But this is a law that is currently on the books and could potentially be enforced at any time. And what the law says is that the interest on a criminal judgment that imposes a monetary obligation can be at a rate of 9% per year. And so there are all of these different ways that the balance can grow. And in all of these cases, the incredibly frustrating thing is all of these fees are allowed to occur without notifying the person. So your case may have been closed for many years. You may have moved addresses. You may have not kept up your current contact information with the court. And all of a sudden, you get a collections letter and you find out that you owe much, much more than you owed previously.
So, what can a person do? How do they get these charges reduced, waived, canceled? It just sounds hopeless and places such a burden.
First of all, we'd like to send the message that although this seems very complicated, it can be navigated, and that people should not get discouraged by the fact that they have had financial obligations for a very long time, or that it seems like it's just too overwhelming and they can't manage it. There are steps that you can take to genuinely try and address these. And we try to give people the tools in this guide to do that. I would say the most important section of this report is giving people instructions and tips on how they can ask to have a court reduce or cancel their financial obligations after it's already been imposed. We provide kind of a step-by-step instructions for folks on, you want to begin by getting all the information that you can about the financial obligations and what the case number is, how much you owe, what cases that you owe on, how and when these financial obligations were imposed. We kind of give people instructions on all of the helpful information that they can prepare about themselves to prepare to tell a court what your circumstances are, why these fines and fees are burdensome, what your ability to pay is. So, and then we've actually tried to put together some of the laws that people should cite to and the legal information that people should cite to and prepared a sample letter for people to send into the court. There's two primary ways that people can ask courts to go back and review the fines and fees that were imposed in their case. The first, we typically recommend for the municipal courts and local justice courts. So these are the lower level courts that are found in each individual town that typically handle driving offenses, lower level offenses than felonies and misdemeanors. And that is to contact the court, ask the court clerk if there is some specific process that the judge has, or if there's a day that the judge listens to people who have fines and fees issues. And then we've kind of helped people put together how to write a letter, how to prepare to go into court on your own and to make this request. Now, for the circuit courts, the county circuit courts that handle misdemeanor and felony cases, the more serious cases, a couple years ago, the Oregon Judicial Department did try to provide some assistance for individuals who want to ask to have their fines and fees reduced or waived. And they actually put together a new rule, a new court rule, and a new template motion that somebody can file. And it's designed to be used by people who don't have a connection to an attorney that can draft and write and file something for themselves. And we provide links to that in our guide, and there's a copy in the appendix. And it can also be found, it's readily available on the Oregon Judicial Department's website in their section under court forms. And Judicial Department's hope with this new motion was to give people the tools they need to put the information they need in a formal motion, to have the instructions for how to send it to the court or how to bring it to the court in person, have it served on the prosecutor so that they've completed the service necessary, and then to go into the court to make their request. But we do provide additional helpful information on how to fill that out and what information somebody should put in the form. I will just say that any request that somebody makes to have their fines and fees reduced or waived should really focus on two things. The first is explaining to the court why you do not have the ability to make payments and why the current financial obligations are burdensome and how they may be harming you. And the second is to tell the court about the good things about yourself that you've been working on to show the court that you are, that the fines and fees being waived would serve to have you continue being a strong, productive, member of our community. And so that can include letters from friends and families, letters from an employer. It can include any kind of certificates or, certificates of accomplishment, achievement, things that you've done. It's very important to show these things to a judge to motivate the judge and to show that you're not just another case, but like a real person who could truly benefit.
This new guide is called Guide to Court-Ordered Financial Obligations in Oregon Criminal Courts. It's a free guide, and it can be found at ojrc.org. Info. So, Alex, how much of these fines and fees are actually collected if people end up just not paying?
And while it's not the focus of the report, what we have found is that much of the fines and fees imposed by the Oregon courts do go unpaid because people do not have the financial ability to pay them. And so what happens is millions and millions of dollars of fines and fees are imposed by courts. That's money that doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't really serve as any kind of substantial revenue stream. And the court doesn't need these fines and fees to operate. We know that because in many cases, they're not getting the fines and fees paid now. And it's not as if the court is failing to continue to go forward. So really, the imposition of these fines and fees, we know it's creating a substantial harm on the people that they're imposed on, and it's not creating some sort of community benefit. It's not helping the system in any kind of way. It's only burdening the most marginalized people in our communities who are disproportionately affected by the financial obligations.
So imposing these fines and fees really does not deter crime or improve safety?
There's no evidence that fines and fees result in any kind of additional deterrent effect or that they benefit rehabilitation in any way. And in fact, we know that they can severely diminish somebody's ability to get rehabilitated because of everything that we've discussed about the collateral consequences. A person who wants to get their driver's license, wants to find a job, wants to find stable housing, wants to do all of the things right so that they do not find themselves falling back into the criminal legal system is often prevented from doing that because they find themselves in a cycle of poverty created by these fines and fees.
And in Oregon, what are these charges? What is the money used for?
Some of the money that is collected by the courts goes back into the court system, but it's a very small portion of the court's operating budget. Obviously, any money paid towards restitution or compensatory fines is directed to the named victims on the case. But the fines and fees themselves, while they do go back into the court system, they're not a substantial part of the court's operating money. And so it's not clear that the having people pay these very steep financial penalties is creating any kind of benefit.
So, how do we eliminate these court-appointed financial obligations?
It's the hope of Oregon Justice Resource Center that this guide serves as sort of a starting place for stakeholders in this system. And so that includes judges, that includes the attorneys that work in the system, and that includes Oregon legislators. And what we'd like these stakeholders to kind of take away from this guide is, first of all, this is an incredibly complicated process, that it is burdening the people of the most marginalized communities in Oregon, and that to begin looking at certain areas of reform in each of these different categories of court-ordered financial obligations. I think one good starting place would be for the areas that don't have a requirement that a court consider your ability to pay, that be a requirement. But what we've seen is that even in cases where the court is required to look at somebody's ability to pay, that they very often don't. And so I think that in many cases, the stakeholders in this process need to reconsider what the purpose is of our criminal legal system. Is it to keep people continually trapped in sort of this unescapable cycle of not being able to pay and facing the consequences of that inability to pay? Or is our goal truly to seek to better the community and seek to have healthier communities? And if so, then I think that people should very much consider reforming the system to eliminate these financial obligations.
And there are alternatives. I mean, people can do community service, and other states and jurisdictions have taken those steps.
Yes, absolutely. There are alternative ways that courts can address sentencing and punishment that don't involve, going into somebody's pocket and taking their money. And as long as we tie a large portion of our criminal legal system to whether you have money or whether you don't have money, it's going to result in people who are wealthy being able to go through the criminal legal system with very little actual consequence, and people who are struggling financially going through the system and being absolutely crippled by it.
And Alex, what steps has Oregon taken toward eliminating these fines and fees?
There have been some recent reforms in Oregon courts that have, to a certain degree, alleviated some of the burden around fines and fees. One recent piece of legislation that I will bring up, which is discussed in the report in particular, is a recent law in 2022, HB 4120. And this had to do with the fines for violation offenses. So, one kind of interesting kind of quirk in the law before 2022 was that while a court had authority to fully waive fines for felony and misdemeanor cases, there actually was not a provision in the law that allowed courts to waive fines for violation offenses. And the thing that's so kind of terribly ironic about that is that violation offenses are the lowest level offenses that we have in the system. So courts could waive the fines and fees for very serious crimes, but for people who had driving offenses, other very minor violations, courts, even if they wanted to, were not able to fully waive the fines associated with those. So in 2022, the legislature did pass this change to the law that did create an opening for courts to waive violation fines. What this, I think, should mean for folks is that certainly going forward, attorneys and defendants should be asking for violation fines to be waived where appropriate, but also people who have prior violation fines still in their history that are very old, I think should also use the tools in this guide to go back to the courts and ask for consideration for their ability to pay. There has also been recent law around eliminating some of the fees associated with supervision and other kind of probationary supervision. There have historically been many fees that a person needs to pay just for the cost of being supervised by the state. So if you were sentenced by a court to a period of probation, you had to pay a fee. And then very often you had to pay a monthly supervision fee for the cost of having a probation officer. Oregon has recently eliminated those. So while there are these small steps that have been kind of made on the margins that have provided some relief and provide some openings for individuals to help get relief on outstanding fines and fees, there is still a lot more that can be done. And I think that these should kind of serve as a good first step, but hardly addresses the fuller underlying problem. You know, another thing that is relatively recent that we've seen, particularly at OJRC, given our work with incarcerated populations, is recently the Department of Corrections has begun deducting money out of the accounts of people in Oregon prisons for the purpose of paying fines and fees. This was a procedure that began in 2020, actually began in the middle of the COVID pandemic. We, as an organization, actually wrote a letter to the Department of Corrections and to the Oregon Judicial Department urging them to not begin this process, particularly because we were in the middle of the COVID pandemic and all of the incredible financial strains that people were under during this time. But what the Department of Corrections now does and has done since 2020 is if you are in the custody of a prison here in Oregon and you have an outstanding fine and fee balance, even if it is not for the case that you are currently being incarcerated on, they will take 15% of any money that is deposited in your account to pay towards those fines and fees. So what that means for an individual in custody is, and I'll start by saying that a person who is in prison in Oregon does not make any substantial amount of money. On average, we see people earning anywhere from $30 to about $80 a month for their work in Oregon prisons. And of that amount of money, a person loses 15% of that if it has to go to fines and fees. Now, the reason why that small amount of money is so important for people in custody is that that money is used by adults in custody to pay for the phone calls to friends and loved ones and family members. It is the amount of money that pays for mail, sometimes mail to a lawyer or mail to a court or mail to a person's children or family. Money that pays for commissary items. So many of the things in prison, you know, cost substantial amounts of money that a person needs to pay for, you know, the basic necessities, toothbrush, toothpaste, you know, toiletries, sometimes over-the-counter medicines, you know, basic kind of food items. And that 15% deduction is a big deal for folks. And what we found is that there's a whole statute that governs how the 15% gets taken out and what it gets applied to. It is not just money that the person earns that gets deducted 15%. It's any money that gets placed on their books in prison. So if you have a family member or loved one that gives you a couple hundred dollars while you're in prison to help pay for phone calls, that money gets deducted. And when it gets sent to the court, it often gets applied to very old cases. So we have people currently in Department of Corrections custody who are getting deducted 15% to pay for a traffic ticket that they incurred 18 years ago. It is very common that this money gets paid towards cases that people didn't even remember having and were so old that perhaps if they had been addressed by a court, they might have been waived or reduced. And so This is just one more thing that stands in the way of somebody's ability to successfully rehabilitate and transition out into the community. Because, of course, that's less money that a person has the ability to save to make that transition. It's less money that they have to stay connected to their community and their family and friends by way of phone and mail. And it's less money to have the very basic necessities that somebody needs while they're incarcerated, to brush their teeth, to eat some food, to have medicine that they might need. And so it was very unfortunate that this got imposed in people, particularly during the worst possible time of the COVID pandemic.
Alex, give the website again and the name of the guide.
Yes, so the guide is called A Guide to Court-Ordered Financial Obligations. It is available on Oregon Justice Resource Center's website at ojrc.info. And then if you click on the button for reports, it is available in our reports section. It is a free report. We very much hope that people see this, use it to their benefit, and share it with anybody else who they think might benefit from it.
Alex, thank you for this wonderful guide. It is long overdue, and I'm sure people will find it very helpful. I hope it's widely distributed and made available to people in jail, in prison, and in our courts. Again, it can be found at OJRC's website, free of charge. Alex Coven, thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
You have been listening to Radio Zine, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Radio Zine programs at kboo.fm/radiozine. Thank you to our engineer, and thank you for listening.